After praying the Angelus on the feast day of Saints Peter and Paul, the Pope announced that his third encyclical is soon to be published.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, è ormai prossima la pubblicazione della mia terza enciclica, che ha per titolo Caritas in Veritate.
And of course we are eagerly awaiting the publication of the encyclical Caritas in Veritate. His first, Deus Caritas Est, released in January 2006, called for a deeper understanding of love as a gift from God to be shared both at a personal and social level. Then, in November 2007, Pope Benedict signed Spe Salvi, which explores the Christian understanding of hope with reference to modern philosophy and the challenges of disbelief. And now, Caritas in Veritate, Love in Truth, which will outline the goals and values that the faithful must defend to ensure solidarity among people. More specifically, the Pope has actually suggested that in it he looks at certain economic financial paradigms that have been dominant in recent years and at the need to rethink them so that more attention is paid to the rich-poor disparity in the world. The perfect moment, I thought, to take a good look at the world scenario he's talking about. Yes, everyone is talking about the current global economic crisis and of the need for a new economic model. But what exactly does that mean? I asked economist Antonio Martelli, professor in business economics at Milan's Bocconi University.
The words, a global economic crisis, are on the mouths of everyone. What do they really mean?
Well, in very broad terms, we can look at the economy as made up of two parts. One part is the financial economy, where all the financial transactions take place. And the other is the real economy, where goods and services are actually demanded and supplied. Now, the two parts are inseparable, but they're also distinct. I understand that this is not very clear on the face of it, but if you think of it, then the distinction becomes rather evident.
So, you have the financial economy on one side and the real economy on the other. Interdependent, Professor Martelli explained to me, but distinct.
More specifically, the speculative bubble of the so-called subprime mortgages has been, say, the incubator of the crisis. And this bubble was caused by the need to invest the liquidity and partly by the sheer greed of some financial institutions to obtain more profits. What happened was that the financial side of the economy, financial part of the economy, grew so much as that to create an excess of liquidity, and the financial institutions began, especially banks, began to lend money to people so they could buy houses, even when these people did not have really the financial resources to sustain the burden of the mortgages. And when this phenomenon became widespread, the bubble exploded, and here we are with a big financial crisis, probably the largest, which took place after the famous one of 1929 and the following years. There's been also a sort of domino effect, because this bubble exploded first in the United States, but then also banks in other countries, in Europe also, especially in Germany and Britain, were involved in it, and so they also paid their price to the financial crisis.
So what can we learn from our mistakes? There must be a better way to go if we are to rebuild a feasible economic model.
The largest mistake was the absence of rules. Rules to contain the expansion of the, let's call it again, the financial bubble. In some European countries, for once Italy included, the effect of the financial crisis have been less disastrous than in the United States or Britain and partly also in Germany. Why that? Because in these countries, the rules constraining banks and other financial institutions, financial intermediaries in their activity, were more stringent and better applied. So the real problem is to enforce a new system of rules, not to suffocate the positive desire, the positive intention of this institution to grow, but to avoid excesses. For example, to avoid the very bad practice of expanding their credit to people or companies, credits which do not appear in the balance sheets, with the obvious consequences of a practice of this kind. Nobody knows really what the amount of credit these institutions have granted, how much it is, really.
So we can do it?
Of course we can do it, but this should be done at the international level with a concerted action between the central banks and the international institution like the central bank, etc., so as to take gradually to the adoption of more stringent and more effectual set of rules in the operations of these institutions.
Now, it's all very well for us in rich nations to cut back on our expenses and lament the general situation, but I think the people who are really paying the price are the poor, the people in developing countries, aren't they?
Not in the sense that they are paying the whole price, because also poor people in developed countries suffer for the crisis. When there is unemployment, it affects a lot of people everywhere. But certainly, as the economies of these countries are weaker than the economies of the advanced countries, for them the consequences are more serious.
Professor Martelli explained, in fact, that we can point to four different reasons that account for the suffering of these nations due to the crisis.
The first is the reduction of foreign aid. When a government in a developed country has to face an electorate which is already furious for the possible consequences on employment and on the standard of living, it is certainly less prone to give aid to developing countries. A second avenue for the crisis to affect these developing countries is the reduction of remittances from people who emigrated to, say, Germany, Italy, Britain, the United States, etc., and were sending back part of their salaries to help their families at home. And if these people lose their jobs, of course there are less remittances, and this has a negative influence on the economies of these developing countries. A third way is the reduction of trade. Less economic activity means that these countries can export less than they did. And finally, there is the reduction of financial flows. There are less direct investment from developed countries to developing countries. And this certainly contributes to the worsening of the situation there.
But the aspect that Professor Martelli particularly wanted to highlight was an unexpected one: the effects of the global economic crisis on children.
I've been recently in Africa, and I spoke to some people working for UNICEF, and they were particularly worried about the consequences that the crisis could have on the younger and youngest generations. This might affect Medicare, might affect assistance, and also can have a negative effect on dropouts from school. I mean, young people who leave school because their families cannot keep them there, or even the governments cannot keep them there. And the effects of these phenomena are irreversible. Once somebody has lost best year to grow to begin with, and then to acquire an education, then it's irretrievable. There's nothing which can be done in the future. So the situation in this sense is not very positive for those countries.
Yes, once a person has been deprived of what should be his or her best years, those of childhood and of youth, the years in which to grow and in which to acquire an education, there's no way you can make that up to him. A dire consequence of the global economic crisis, Professor Martelli pointed out, a consequence I had never considered at all.